Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
It's time now for our Friday gathering. This week I'm joined by Fianna Fáil TD for County Limerick and newly appointed Minister of State at the Department of Justice, Niall Collins, Sinn Féin TD for Galway West and spokesperson on public expenditure and infrastructure joins us in the studio, Mairead Farrell, along with Louise Byrne, political correspondent with the Irish Mirror and special correspondent at the Irish Examiner, Mick Clifford, and you're all welcome to the programme. Now, we had that day of chaos in the Dáil last week. We had a five-hour meeting yesterday that got nowhere, and the Dáil Reform Committee is meeting again this morning to try and resolve this issue over Dáil speaking time for the regional independence. Niall Collins, Fianna Fáil offered a compromise to resolve this, but it has been roundly rejected as just completely missing the point. So what's the plan?
Well, I think the rejection of what Mary Butler tabled in the last 24 hours is just a further example of how this whole debacle is a complete farce, which has been manufactured, generated and driven by Sinn Féin just to be in opposition for opposition's sake. I pointed out previously we had confidence in supply. We had the late Jackie Healy-Ray. We had, for example, Dr. Michael Harty. We had the late Tony Gregory. Many politicians supported government on a case-by-case basis from the opposition benches over the years. And, you know, it's an obligation and a duty and a right of every deputy and parliamentarian in Dáil Éireann to be able to exercise their mandate, speak on behalf of their constituents, raise matters with the government, with the Taoiseach, with individual ministers.
But hang on a second. When the row erupted, you promised to sort it out. You gave a commitment to sort it out. Now you're saying it's a farce.
Well, it was a farce then. And it's now an even bigger farce.
So when Hildegard Nocton stood up and said, hang on a second, this is really important.
It is.
She stood up and she said, we're committing to solve this. Now you're saying, no.
No, so what Mary Butler tabled in the last 24 hours was a clear demonstration that there would be no reduction or diminution in the time available to Sinn Féin or to the other groupings who want to term themselves as opposition. She, in fact, increased the amount of time which would be available to question the Taoiseach and the ministers across the three working days of Dáil Éireann, and that was roundly rejected. So what we hear from Sinn Féin, for example, is from Padraig McLaughlin, quoting from him, it's either opposition our government. But it's not, because the reality is there are people who sit in Dáil Éireann who support government on a case-by-case basis. They may oppose government
basis. What you're suggesting is that Michael Lowry and the others would still be able to act as opposition but supporting the government. And it was Paul Murphy from People Before Profit who said they want Lowry, who has pledged to support the government, to ask them questions about how great they are.
No, that is just so disingenuous. Michael Lowry, any TD has a right and should be afforded the opportunity to question the government of the day, to hold the government of the day to account. And I'm really, you know, I mean, it just shows the cynical, two-faced approach by Sinn Féin to this whole debacle from the very start.
Let's get Mairead Farrell's view on that.
Proven,
she's shaking her head here beside me.
I'm shaking my head also here in the Limerick
studio. Mairead Farrell, a farce, unacceptable and two-faced and cynical. What do you say?
Look, first of all, to me, this is totally and utterly black and white. You can't have a situation whereby government TDs are sitting on opposition benches. These are TDs who negotiated a programme for government. How anybody could suggest that they are not part of government is beyond me. To me, it actually is that black and white.
But when the whole thing erupted, didn't you just want to get your time that you felt you were entitled to as opposition? Now he's saying you can have that time.
No, so I think there's a misunderstanding about two different issues that kind of happened last week. First of all, there was in relation to the speaking time on the day in terms of nominations of the Taoiseach. And then there was...
I'm talking about speaking time here.
So anyway, the point here is, and I did a huge amount of media on that day, right?
Yeah.
Where I was very clear that fundamentally we're talking about governmental TDs sitting on opposition benches. You wouldn't hear the like of it. I cannot understand how anybody couldn't see that this is a black and white issue. To have the suggestion that TDs who said that they're going to be with government through thick and thin, that's different to the case by case basis that Niall is referring to. You know, there are people that
by
case by case basis support government. This is about TDs who helped negotiate a programme for government, who have said that they would support government through thick and thin, or whatever the words, particular mm-hmm. words were, but something to that effect. That is very different to a case-by-case basis. This is very serious.
So what happens now? Do we have more disruption, or where does this go?
Well, this can be resolved. Like, this should be resolved. It should have been resolved last week. It doesn't take a huge amount to resolve an issue like this.
So what they have to tell Michael Lowry and the others, you do not get opposition speaking time. That's it. That's your bottom line.
Well, it's the government to decide that government TDs sit as government TDs and not as opposition benches. I want to be in the Dáil next Wednesday discussing the huge fallout of the damage of the storm that was caused across the West mm-hmm. and in other areas. I do not want to be discussing this, but having a situation whereby, for me, it comes down to fundamentally to parliamentary democracy, that government TDs would sit in government as government TDs and not on opposition mm-hmm. benches. And to me, it is that black and white.
See, now you can't say it's normal for Michael Lowry, given that he was a core part of the negotiation of this programme for government, that he would get a slot at leaders' questions to question Micheál Martin.
But Michael Lowry, for example, has supported governments for the last 15, 20 years from a distance from the opposition benches. And he has had an opportunity to raise matters and legitimate concerns of his constituents and others, national, local issues, the same as any other TD. What we're seeing here is an attempt by Sinn Féin to try and silence people. And we know over their history and over their years are very good at silencing people and suppressing people's voices. People have a legitimate, an elected mandate, like Michael Lowry, like Danny Healy-Ray. All of these people are elected by the people of Ireland, and they have a job to represent their voices and they should be fully entitled to raise issues.
In fairness, Sinéad, there is no precedent for this, anything like it. Let's put things in context. The Ceann Comhairle was selected and elected on the basis that she was part of a specific group, that group being the Regional Independent Group. Two junior ministers are on the basis of that, as are two super junior ministers. They negotiated the programme for government as a group. And what they're effectively saying is those who are not being paid a ministerial salary, at the least, and far more in the case of Verona Murphy, even though she's left the group now on the basis of her new job, what they are saying is those who are sitting on the back benches will now have the opportunity to present themselves as opposition. There is no precedent for it whatsoever.
But Mick, can I just make this point? Mary Butler, and the criticism from Sinn Féin and the request from Sinn Féin was, we don't want our speaking time being eroded. And Mary Butler has...
It's not the issue in fairness, Niall. The issue is very plain.
I don't think Fianna Fáil can handle that the opposition have come together on this and only want to talk about Sinn Féin.
That's absolutely nonsense, Mairead.
What you're trying to do,
and I don't agree with Mickey, what you're trying to do is suppress the voices of people who have been democratically elected.
Well, you're the one who's speaking over me.
And there are Fianna Fáil backbenchers.
Democratically elected people on their own do not have a voice in the Dáil anyway. One needs to be part of a group.
Absolutely. And what's wrong with having a technical group and giving them speaking rights and giving them an opportunity?
Because they've had a view on a programme for government and they've had an input and they're prepared to support a programme for government
where they feel it has merit. I mean, there will be, and I've said this also, there will be pieces of legislation, like, for example, the Occupied Territories Bill, which will come before a version of it, which will come before the Dáil, which will be supported hopefully by all parties. Does that diminish? Does that take from the credibility of Sinn Féin as being an
Louise
opposition
Byrne
party?
Wants to come in here. Go
Absolutely
ahead.
Doesn't.
Niall is saying that it's just Sinn Féin. The opposition are hugely united on this. And what they're saying is they don't have an issue with Michael Lowry and the other regional independents that negotiated the programme for government having speaking time. They said they wouldn't dare take their speaking time away from them because they recognise that that is an important part of democracy. The issue here is that they don't want it on the opposition benches. They want it to come from the government bloc. They don't see the merit in Michael Lowry having leaders' questions because they don't see him as a member of the opposition. Now, from what I understand from that meeting last night, Michael Lowry has indicated that there is no room to compromise on that, that he and that group want a leader's question spot. That meeting started up at 11 o'clock again this morning. From what I've heard so far, there's going to be absolutely no change, that there's doesn't seem to be any compromise coming. That meeting is in person. I would say tempers are going to be very flared given how tetchy it was online last night. And I think the real question now is, what are we going to do, or what is the government going to do, or what is Michael Lowry's group going to do to prevent a repeat of the scenes that we saw last Wednesday? Because that is what is being threatened, and I don't think a large parts of the opposition are going to let business proceed if this is not sorted. And I don't think anyone wants to see that happen again, because it was a disgrace what happened last week.
And there's one other thing. The two main parties of this government were returned. Unlike most incumbent governments across the Western world in recent years, it was a certain vote of confidence. It gave them huge political capital, relatively speaking. They have squandered that to a huge extent in the kind of deal they made with Michael Lowry and his fellows in that group, and the amount of leeway they gave them, most specifically this particular one.
Mm-hmm. Niall, do you want to come back on that? Because you are, I mean, even over the course of our conversation here, you are spending a lot of political capital on making sure that Michael Lowry has time in leaders' questions. It's a bizarre situation to be in for you, is it not?
Well, it's not. I don't agree that it's a bizarre situation. And I would reiterate the point that I've made. This is about trying to suppress some people's voices in government. Michael Lowry, whether you like him or loathe him, has a mandate. He's been returned on many occasions by the people of Tipperary, and he's entitled to exercise his mandate. He's entitled to support a programme for government from the opposition benches, in my view. That has been done in the past. And, you know, we're going to go on to discuss gender balance. When you see the disgraceful scenes which were initiated by Sinn Féin last week in the Dáil, with an outright attack on the first woman, Ceann Comhairle, bullying, threatening, misogynistic, carry on inside Ní Oireachtas. You'd be wondering why we're struggling to
They are very strong accusations into politics.
Well, it's the truth, by the way.
Sorry, let her respond.
As a woman, I'm allowed to speak too, Niall. Thanks.
Of course you are.
But I think Niall has Sinn Féin on the brain a bit there. It's very clear what we're talking about here is about having a good functioning parliamentary democracy whereby you have opposition and you have government. I think that's a fairly fundamental thing that most people would understand. I don't understand why Niall is jumping through hoops to try and defend this. I don't think that if Fianna Fáil were in opposition and they saw something like this happen, that they would be having any of it either. And that's why you can see that opposition
is
united in relation...
lest you forget... We took part in confidence supply for the good of the country. To facilitate,
and now you're having
government.
A situation whereby you're literally letting somebody, where you're having literally letting somebody just dictate to yourselves that you decide
no,
that you
dictating.
Well, you seem to be jumping through hoops. You seem to be. Oh, you don't want to let me speak. That's okay.
No,
go on,
I'm
man.
Not jumping through hoops, but I'm pointing out to you,
Niall,
the Fianna Fáil party, as the lead opposition party, facilitated confidence and supply at a point in time when this country needed a government. Every country, a mature democracy has to have a functioning government.
Functioning opposition as well.
Absolutely. And people are entitled to support government on occasion and not support government on occasion from the opposition bench.
The opposition benches, and I think they probably have a point in this, in their draft submission to the Ceann Comhairle last week, said that it can't be compared to confidence and supply, because the difference with confidence and supply was the Fianna Fáil abstained on votes and they didn't, they said they wouldn't support or they wouldn't commit to supporting motions no confidence or voting in favour of financial resolutions that government was putting in place, and they could never be relied on in crunch votes. And I think the difference is, as the opposition are pointing out, Michael Lowry has said he's going to be there through thick and thin. And I mean, I think it does raise questions of whether they are comparable, and the opposition certainly don't think they are, although I know that is what Fianna Fáil is saying. Taoiseach Micheál Martin was saying it during the week as well.
Okay, Louise, we're going to move on now to the junior ministerial appointments and all of the talk over the weekend about the issue around gender and the number of women who were appointed. What were you hearing?
Yeah, and I mean, there was quite, I think, mixed reaction, I think, in the government benches, because a lot of people were saying, well, there should be more women and we want more women in politics, and this is a sign that, if you run for election, if you get elected, will you be put forward for these big positions, or will you just be left to wither on the back benches? And I think it's also worth pointing out, a lot of women have been saying to me that they hate this discussion. They don't want to be having this discussion, and they don't want this question of, was she, promoted because she's a woman, or was she because she promoted because she's very capable? So they don't like having this discussion. But I guess the other side of the argument that I was hearing, predominantly from men, it is worth saying, is what else were we supposed to do? There was 7 women elected for Fianna Fáil out of 48 TDs. TDs. In Fine Gael, out of 38 TDs, 10 were women. And what they are arguing is that in Fianna Fáil's case, that they have put over 50% in high profile positions. Now, 4 out of 7 isn't, it's over 50%, but it's not a huge amount. And in Fine Gael, they've done 4 out of 10. So they're making the argument, well, what more were we to do? But I think it does raise a broader question about the women that parties are putting forward for election. Are they putting forward women just so they can meet the quota, just so they can say, well, we've put the gender balance on the ticket and, you know, it's up to the electorate to decide? Or are they putting women forward that they think have a hope in hell of getting elected
right,
in the first
place? Are you nodding in agreement that you think parties are putting forward women just to meet the quotas?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you need to run women in winnable seats. You need to put them in winnable parts of the constituency. So constituencies, you know, you might have, say, an area that's strong for your political party in part of a constituency, but not in another part. If you have, if you're adding on women kind of on tickets where they're not in strong parts of the constituency, well then they're far less likelihood, like anybody would, of getting elected if you're running in that area, because you don't have that core base vote. I remember having this conversation, I think it was on the Week in Politics before the election, and was about, you know, parties meeting their gender quotas and all that kind of thing. But I said at the time, I said, unless you're running women in winnable seats, it ain't going to happen. And I have to say, it's like when we saw the ministers walk in last Thursday, see as a woman, right? You just see it. It was mainly men walking in.
But Sinn Féin's own reshuffle, like this week, there was very little change. Piers Doherty, Owen O'Brien, David Cullinan. You know, David Cullinan there at the top again.
I think it's like, I can't remember the exact figure, right? But it's basically half and half. Like I'm on front bench, so is Rose Comey Walsh, so is Claire Curran, so is Louise O'Reilly, so is Donna McGettigan, so is Joanna Byrne, and potentially a few others that I'm now, obviously, because I don't have a list in front of me, forgetting. So it's very clear that we put women forward. But not only that, from when you see how many women we actually have elected, we run women in winnable seats and in parts of constituencies that are winnable.
Okay.
And look, at the end of the day, right, because people do, like this annoys people, and a lot of, you know, there's people that say it needs to be on merit and all those kind of things. It is on merit. It's not that, you know, Rose Comey Walsh would be a fantastic enterprise spokesperson, for example. For us, it's very, very clearly on merit. But if we're making the legislation, which we are, to that impacts on all the people, then it needs to be as representative of society as possible.
Okay, Niall, what's your response to all of that? That despite the gender quotas ramping up, we've fewer women in this government than we had in the last.
Yeah, and I think when you look at, we had gender quotas at 30%, and it's now moved to 40% at election times. It's not working. It's a very blunt instrument, and I think you know, there has to be a proper reflection in relation to that. My own party ran, I think, the most number of women candidates in the general election. We had in excess of 40%. The public only elected 7 out of our 34 candidates, and 4 of those women are in government. And I would agree with Louise. If you speak to any of the women, when I speak to my women colleagues, they find it insulting, an insinuation, if you know, if that's an insinuation that one makes, that they should be promoted solely on the basis of their gender. Obviously, people should be promoted on the basis of their ability. But gender has to be a consideration, and I think everybody wants to see more gender participation. It's easier, obviously, for the newer, smaller and the pop-up parties to comply with gender and to have more women elected, because they have more opportunity, because incumbency is an issue, obviously, for the bigger parties. And my own party has put huge effort and huge resources into
you're calling Sinn Féin a pop-up party.
I didn't say sorry, you're a little bit paranoid there in relation to that. Absolutely not. Sinn Féin is not a pop-up party and is not one of the smaller parties.
Okay.
But I think
it's a very serious issue.
We're going to move on.
And we want to talk now about the response to the storm. And I think a lot of people were struck this morning when they heard on Morning Ireland the principal of Tully Primary School, Barbara Warbout, who said that her school was so badly damaged that children will go to class next week in the dressing rooms of their local community hall. We'll have a quick listen.
I have literally only today been able to send them an email because we've had such problems with our power, and I suppose I just got an automated response for now. I want to see people. I don't want emails. I don't want phone calls. I want department representatives down to tell me what to do, because this is just overwhelming. There's only so much that a board of management and a principal can carry. I need the department to put the plan in place and to help us and support us.
So Barbara's talking there about the department response that she got and the one that she actually needed, Niall. Are you disappointed overall with the government response to what happened in the wake of the storm?
No, I'm not. Look, I mean, I hugely appreciate and understand the frustration. I'm coming to you from Limerick, where we had two severe weather events in the last number of weeks, as you know, and no more than Mairead Farrell, I'm sure, and other members of the Oireachtas and public representatives. I'm inundated in terms of dealing with constituents. I dealt with a constituent on the phone on the way into the studio here in Limerick. Look, government and cabinet made a decision this week. There'd be a full review of our response in relation to this. The ESB, to their credit, and I heard your ESB contributor earlier on in your programme, gave an overview in relation to where they are, and they are going to be working flat out over the weekend.
Yeah, but that's different to what I'm talking about, Niall. You know, would you not have expected people from the Department of Education, for example, and the HSE to be down, boots on the ground, saying to GPs, to teachers, to principals, what do you need, what can we do, what's the damage here, rather than people like Barbara trying to sort it all out herself?
Absolutely.
Look, and being completely overwhelmed by it.
Absolutely. There should be, and you know, the HSE should be in contact with their, obviously, with their GP community, with their pharmacy community. We stood up local coordination groups across 19 local authority areas. There's 285 emergency response hubs have been stood up to deal with that. Dara Cleary has launched a humanitarian assistance scheme. There is a lot happening.
I saw our own Angus Cox on the news last night, Niall, trying to explain how to fill in that form to try and get assistance. And I just thought, would people not just go down, government, and hand out €50 vouchers to people so they can get a hot dinner and not be asking them to fill out forms and go to the community welfare officer and so on? I mean, surely that can change and can change quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. I think anything that makes it easier for people to avail of humanitarian assistance, I would agree with you. And that's certainly something which should happen. Mm-hmm. But I want to say this. This was a significant event, and we're having a lot of more frequent significant events. And I think we will learn from the lessons of this.
There'll be a full review.
There'll be a full review.
Niall, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the time is passed. And Mairead, I know you're really in the thick of it this week.
And look, as Niall, we've just been inundated, but there's a few key things that we need to know here, and that doesn't always get the exact the full airtime. 999 is still not working in certain parts of Connemara. It's probably in other areas as well, but obviously Connemara is where I know. You cannot ring 999. Until last night, there were certain health centres with no electricity. That means that medicine that is in cushioners or in refrigerators had to be dumped. No, there's still health centres that don't have broadband, that can't be phoned. We need to look at this now. Like, we can look at what we need to do now in terms of fixing it, but we also need to all collectively work together on what we can do long term. All health centres need to have a generator. They fundamentally do. Also, the water pumps need to have a generator. There's still people that don't have water, but people until yesterday didn't have water, an awful lot of people. If you don't have access to water, you don't have anything. I had a public health nurse ring me yesterday to tell me that she had visited an 80-year-old man who has not left his bed because it is so cold. She told me that when she touched him, that he was colder than corpses that she has touched. It is like a war zone, and it's extremely difficult to explain unless you're out there and you see it. I completely agree with you, Claire, that we need to have people from the departments out in the community. Myself and other TDs have been travelling around the constituencies just because we know people can't contact us, so we physically have to drive out there. But that there were medical emergencies and people can't ring 999. Mm-hmm. There's also been Raidan Gwiltoth have also reported that Tetra was down in Connemara and that wasn't working. So we really need to look at all collectively together now what we can we do, that if this happens again, that there is that kind of basic emergency contact lines. We also need to see serious investment in the basic infrastructure so that poles aren't just literally breaking apart.
Mm-hmm. Mick, I know you lost your power for a short time, but I suppose, and we hear this all the time on the text messages, like if this happened in Dublin,
and it was restored very quickly.
Yeah, that was your experience.
Yeah, that was my experience. Unfortunately, because I was in the north side of Dublin, I wasn't out in rural Ireland, and there's no question there are major issues there. I mean, Mairead's talking about the long term. The main long term thing is resilience. That's resilience in terms of the electricity supplies. And remember, we have four times per capita more electricity lines than any other European country because of our dispersed population. That's a long term thing. thing. That's a political and social thing. This is the time that things like that come home to roost, unfortunately, for the people who are caught there. Similarly, you look at issues like resilience in terms of flood works. Down in Cork, how many legal challenges do you have? So you've that whole system. It's all very well to say investment, and absolutely investment needs to be made. Huge investment. There also needs to be a scenario whereby this resilience can be implemented and done so with the least fuss, by particularly through planning systems.
But they're all long term, aren't they? They're part of the full review that Niall Collins is telling us about. But in the immediate, what do you think of the response this week?
I mean, it has been slipshod. No, okay, Dick. Sorry, not slipshod. That's a bit harsh. It has been left wanting. There's no doubt about it. Okay, you have the excuse. This was the worst storm that we've had in a generation or whatever. But these things have been predicted and they're going to be more frequent. The whole idea that you don't have people sent down directly from the departments concerned, I think that's most definitely an
issue. Louise, you were there, weren't you? You were in Roscommon when the Taoiseach visited.
I was, on Tuesday. And I mean, you were speaking to people and they were at, this was Tuesday, so this is only a couple of days where they had no power and no water, and they were at the end of their tether, and they were coming to these hubs and they were very grateful for them, but they felt that they didn't have all the information. And I'm sure most people now have seen that interaction between the Taoiseach and Rachel Connolly in the hub in Castlereagh. And I mean, she was so frustrated. She had a Leaving Cert student at home who was studying by candlelight. She had thrown €300 worth of food out of her fridge and freezer alone that week, and this has happened to her 3 or 4 times. And I mean, it does raise questions about the long term thing here. Can we have people without power and water for weeks on end? And it's not very fair in a country as wealthy as we are.
Well, look, we think about the people who are going to have to go through this entire weekend now and still not be connected, some of them until the 7th or the 5th or the 6th rather, hopefully by the 7th of February. Listen, we have to leave it there. Thank you all very much. Niall Collins, who was in Limerick, Mairead Farrell from Sinn Féin, who was here, Louise Byrne from the Mirror, and Mick Clifford from the Examiner.